You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This week we continue with Tea and Sympathetic Magic. But before I do, this is the last week of my Patreon special offer. All subscribers to my Patreon before 28th of January 2020 will receive the early ebook of my new collection Unreal Alchemy, containing the first four Belladonna U stories, so Fake Geek Girl, Unmagical Boy Story, The Bromances, and The Alchemy of Fine, with a lovely new cover. All subscribers at $15 will receive the early paperback, including postage. This is the first time that these stories have ever been in print before, like on the actual Dead Tree page. $15 subscribers this month also receive a Manticore mini story, a Manticore badge, and a whole lot more in the way of rewards. So do check out my Patreon if you haven't subscribed before. But for now, Tea and Sympathetic Magic, Chapter 3. Sympathetic magic was fair game in the courting dance and the marriage market. After all, the mesmeric effects of a cursed dolly or a carefully placed posy of herbs were known to be mild in effect. One could not make a person fall in love with you, no matter how many times you kissed a woven piece of straw with their hair tangled in it, or whispered sweet nothings to a letter written in their personal hand. Sympathetic magic could wield more intensity if the magic user was especially strong in the art, but those cases were rare. To previous generations, such magical tricks were considered entirely appropriate to help things along, the equivalent of pinching your cheeks to look rosy, or pouring the brandy with a heavier touch if one thought a proposal might be in the offing. Perhaps Mr. Charles Thornberry might consider the liberal use of brandy unfair means of winning a husband also. Perhaps he might judge the pinching of cheeks. Neem knew of 100 chaperones and matchmaking mamas who would disagree with him, but she rather liked his sense of honour. Of course, Thornberry was charged with protecting the most eligible gentlemen of the teacup aisles from a veritable horde of thirsty young ladies. A marriageable duke under 40 years of age who still had his own teeth did not come along every season. In his line of work, cynicism was inevitable. The first week of the house party passed in a flurry of organised entertainments, formal meals, and whispered gossip. With the Countess a no-show, the front-runner in the courtship of the Duke of Storm was Lady Liesel of Sandwich, fourth daughter of the sitting Earl of Sandwich, and the season's acknowledged most valued player. She was beautiful in a slender, pale sort of way, quietly witty, and seemed to think Henry was marvellous. A surprise second horse in the race for his affections was Mrs. Juno von Trask, a bold widow with a sultry voice, an impressive bosom, and a quick mind for card games. She ran rings around Henry, challenging him at every turn, and when he wasn't rendered speechless by the pallid beauty of Lady Liesel, he was clearly one veiled innuendo away from kissing the ungloved hand of Mrs. von Trask. Neem's mousy cousin Metis, who had finally managed to leave Aunt Hecate at home in favour of a hired chaperone for the first time since she came out, was something of an enigma. Neem had always assumed that Metis felt as she did about the possibility of marrying their cousin Henry. He was too loud, too sociable, too attached to town and its entertainments to make an appealing husband. But Neem had underestimated how desperate Metis was to get out from under the thumb of Aunt Hecate and her machinations. As the week went on, Cousin Metis worked diligently to gain traction with the Duke. She did remarkably well, thanks to some cleverly placed witticisms, a few calculated moments of socially appropriate intimacy, and a flattering new blue bonnet that made her eyes sparkle in the sunshine. Mrs. Von Trask and Lady Liesel were at their best during parlour games and at the supper table, but Cousin Metis had the edge with daytime activities, thanks to her physical skills at charmed croquet, archery and riding, not to mention her uncanny sense of timing, which meant that more often than not she ended up partnered with Henry. For the first time in years, Meta Seaborn had colour in her cheeks. It was fascinating for Neame to watch, even if she knew she would never hear the end of it from her mamma if mousy cousin Metis snagged Henry's hand. Miss Letty Agnew realised early on that the Duke of Jupiter had very little interest in her particular charms. Rather than invest too much in a horse race, where she would inevitably come in fourth, she bowed out gracefully and promptly caught the attention of two of Henry's invited friends, Colonel Winterbourne, moderately handsome and of moderate fortune, and Simon St. Swithins, doctor of the village, delightfully shy, painfully poor, and clearly head over heels for young Letty. There was quite a deal of entertainment to be had in watching Lady Agnew's contortions in trying to keep Dr. St. Swithins away from Letty, while hurling her in the path of the Duke and Colonel Winterbourne as often as possible. Neame could have told Lady Agnew that this was a sure way to end up with a village doctor as a son-in-law, but no one asked her, so she stayed quiet on the subject, except when agreeing with Letty that Dr. St. Swithins did indeed have dreamy eyes, a verifiable fact. By far the strangest aspect of this long, busy week was the accidental friendship Neame somehow acquired with a certain spellcaster. Once she noticed the existence of Mr. Thornberry, he was everywhere, at the croquet pitch, in the day parlours and the evening parlours. Most especially, he was in the library. The ladies retired to Storm North's magnificent library after breakfast every morning for their daily correspondence with relatives and friends. Without fail, Thornberry would be there, busily researching something, pointedly removing a curse from some item or other belonging to the Duke and ensuring that no lady of the house party went anywhere near the section of the library reserved for texts on love spells, compulsion spells, or sympathetic magic. Based on what he had apparently confiscated over the last few days, very few of them needed to consult books for further study in any case. If Thornberry wasn't in the library, he was elsewhere in the house, constantly vigilant for any cases of wrongdoing around his employer. And he took great pride in informing Neame of the latest developments and discoveries of his work. She wasn't sure why at first, but she could not deny that she found it fascinating. She had collected almost enough anecdotes to write her own treatise on the use of minor charms in foiled wooing attempts. Before long, she began sharing her own information. After all, she wanted Henry to be happy in his marriage, and one must presume it was better he had some say in who his future bride was to be, instead of leaving it in the hands of whomever was canny enough to outwit Mr. Thornberry. "His Grace's hairbrush went missing today," Thornberry confided in Neame, as she passed his desk in search of a new novel. "Lady Liesel's embroidery hoop has some suspicious red hairs caught up in the stitches," she told him in response the following morning, "and I'm pretty sure Mrs. Von Trask's letters to her sister just consist of the words 'The Duchess of Storm' written out over and over." "I cleared 3 portraits of eligible ladies out from under His Grace's favourite chair this evening," he told her once after supper. "The lavender bush in the east shrubbery has been plucked bald," she informed him at the same time. "Keep a lookout for charmed nosegays and handkerchief bundles under his pillow." "They want him to dream of them," Thornberry said with a smirk. "Wasting their time," Neame sighed. I'm certain Henry dreams of nothing but horses and breakfast. It was fascinating the lengths to which the ladies were prepared to go to capture a duke. Neame had known such things happened, of course, but had never quite been this invested in the game. "Don't do that," she said sharply to Metis one morning, when she caught her cousin early in the breakfast room, attempting to smuggle a lock of her own hair into the cushion of the seat at the head of the table. "That's the first place Thornbury will look. You're better off putting it in a random chair and coming up with an excuse for the Duke to sit there at the last moment." "What would you know?" Meta sulked, but she did as Neame suggested. The Duke was delighted at the notion of swapping chairs at breakfast. Thornbury only caught on at the last second, whisking the cushion away from beneath the ducal arse and disposing of it with an expressionless face. "I thought you weren't playing," he muttered later, catching Neame's arm as she followed the others out for croquet. His fingertips were warm enough that she could feel their heat through the butter muslin of her sleeve. "You want it to be a challenge, don't you?" she teased, and almost tossed her head at him before realizing that she should not flirt with a man she did not intend to marry. "Bring it on," he said in a voice that sounded more charmed than annoyed. Uh-oh. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge, especially this week with my special offer. See you next week for more tea and sympathetic magic.